Welcome to You Said This Would Be Fun, the internet's premier game design advice show. I am your host, game designer Jeff Warrender. I'm joined tonight by game designer and voiceover artist Quentin Hudspeth. Q, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for being here tonight. Now, Q, for a couple of years now, you know, polyomino games have really been lighting a big fire in our industry. And you came up with a really unique twist on this genre of game that I think, seeing how you've implemented that, would probably be very interesting to our audience. So tell us a little about your game, how it came about, and how you physically realized it, because that to me has been very interesting to watch as it's unfolded.
Oh, okay. Well, the deep story is I had one of those puns in my head. For some reason, raising hell popped into my head, with raising spelled with the Z, you know, by knocking things down. And so I started thinking, what would a game be about that? If you were literally raising hell. So I started working on, a building game where the idea was that Lucifer was out on vacation or whatever, and the princes of hell were coming together to basically take over, and they were vying for control of the different regions of hell to basically knock them down and then rebuild them in whatever design style they liked. So that was the origin of this game. I don't even know if you knew that.
I think I remember that from an early playtest was how it started. But the physicality of the game was really what grabbed us all right away.
The physicality of it was, it's like, well, if we're going to be building stuff, things have to lock into each other. So it just sort of naturally fell into the polyominoes shapes because, being nearly 50, of course, I'm familiar with Tetris, played a lot of it in the day. So I think that just sort of kind of jumped forward into my head. It's like, well, obviously these are the things that you want to play with because we all know that they nest very well with each other. So I cut out a bunch of pieces of paper shaped as a significant amount, at least, of the polyominoes. We're just using the ones with four bits and then stacked down from that.
Right.
And then just sort of played around with getting them to stack on top of each other and then eventually printed out plastic, 3D printed plastic models of the pieces so that I could get them to nest together and see if we could actually do the stacking. And it worked out pretty well.
And you've actually, if I'm not mistaken, you've implemented this in Tabletop Simulator as well. And it also stacks and nests in the same way, I think.
Yeah, the stacking and nesting was, it seemed okay at first, but as we started to go up several floors, we started to run into some trouble. And I think that had to do with the way I constructed the pieces by starting with a single piece and then just laying them out in the grid and linking them together to make the different shapes. There was enough uncertainty, I guess, in the distances between them that sometimes the pieces weren't aligning perfectly. So I've been trying to redesign them from a different perspective. So I just took the original CAD drawings that I had made to do the 3D prints, imported them as models into Tabletop Simulator, so saved a lot of time. But since the actual physical models are, I don't know, how would you describe that shape, Jeff? Imagine a cube with a slightly smaller cube sitting on top of it.
Yeah,
that's one of the shapes.
So and the bottom cube is open at the bottom so that it can sit down on.
Yeah. So they just slip right into each other. Works well in real life. Works pretty well in Tabletop Simulator. But because of the way TTS does its physics, you don't actually need that. You can just have a block stack on top of a block and be just perfectly
and just
fine.
Stay there.
It's not
going to
fall over. So I'm reworking it in terms of just, cubical rectilinear shapes without all of the fancy stuff. And I was running into some trouble with the collision meshes not playing nicely. So I haven't looked at it for a little while. But yeah, the one time we played through it, it worked fine. There was some fiddliness and we had to fight with getting things to nest, but we managed to play a whole game and it worked out really well.
All right. Well, yeah, thanks for telling us about that. So the game is called Uncivil Engineering, and it's been really just a blast to watch this one go through the process from inception to all the way to physical realization. So if you want to hear more about that one, check out Q on Twitter at Q Hudspeth.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, Q, I see that we have a caller on the design line, line one. We have Jeff calling in from Richmond. And Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, Jeff.
Okay, yes, like the first name. It's really great. So,
It's a good one. It's a good one.
Jeff, welcome to the show. You're on with Jeff and Q, and tell us a little about your game and what we might be able to do to help.
Sure. My game's called Portrait Geist. It's a light hidden movement game for 3 to 5 players. Plays in about 60 minutes. One person controls a ghost who's floating around a mansion trying to free his ghostly friends from their portrait prisons, while the rest of the players play a team of hunters trying to stop him. I've been designing it for about 4 years, probably 5 now, and just I'm hitting that point where I've been trying to pitch it, trying to find out how to get it across the goal line, if you will. I've taken it to different conventions, and when I put it in places where I play it with just your average gamer, it does very well. But when I put it in front of people who are either other game designers or publishers, it tends to get compared to other games. And the general question I get is, why would I play this over that? And so it's a struggle. It definitely takes you out of it. And I can look at it and say, like, well, my game has a different combat mechanic. My game plays in less time than those games. I can try to sell it, but it just first impressions are everything, and it's like, what can I do to stand apart from the crowd?
Where do you stand in terms of assets for the game, the art and components?
Well, I have a friend who is a graphic art designer. I had him help me make the board look more than just a prototype. I have a friend who does some 3D modeling, and she made me some actual 3D models of the little ghosts,
Oh, that's
which is
great.
fun. So table presence, it's got it there now.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. I've got it on Tabletop Simulator.
Nice.
So, yeah, I mean, I'll climb on my soapbox for a second and say I totally understand the feedback you're getting, and I hate that kind of feedback because it's I think we as an industry put too much emphasis on, new and innovative and totally unlike anything else that's ever existed before. Like the reality is that Pepsi and Coke are very similar products, and people buy Pepsi and people buy Coke, and sometimes the same people buy Pepsi and Coke, sometimes in the sh same shopping trip. So, but be that as it may, that's what you're hearing from the people who you're pitching the game to. So we do have to, take their perspective into account, whether or not we agree with it, which I do not. But anyway, no one cares what I think, and that's part of the problem.
Yeah,
That's why I have my own show.
it is a
So,
valid question, right? I mean, if you're going to throw money at something, specifically a hobby that can be expensive like ours, it is a legitimate question to ask, why do I want to buy your product over somebody else's? And it may just be the answer is there is no difference. Grab one and have fun. Because that's what this is all about.
So I have so what so let's dissect what they're telling you a little bit. I have never heard of a game about freeing ghosts from portraits. I think that's really, really clever and innovative. I love that idea. So in what way are they saying your game is similar to other things that they're seeing on the market? Surely not in the setting, which seems quite original.
Yeah, right.
Well, so the number one comparison I gets to, obviously I don't know, there's not a lot of hidden movement games out there, in my opinion. The game itself came from a love of Fury of Dracula, which is like one of my favorite games of all
That's the
time,
main one. Yep.
but it takes 3 hours to play.
Yep.
And so I was trying to create that experience and condense it down to an hour or less and make it so it was accessible to people that I didn't have to sit and spend 30 minutes worth of rules. So it becomes one of the things, that's how I try to pitch it. And then I get, like, the last time I got compared to Spectre Ops, which is also a very good game in its own right. I personally, other than it being a hidden movement game, I didn't get the comparison.
Okay.
There's dice. It's a very large board. It's a grid. I mean, unfortunately, when you do a hidden movement game, there's usually one person that's moving around in secret trying to do something, and everyone else is trying to get them. So there is a comparison there. I would agree with that.
Yeah, and of course, the granddaddy of that genre is Scotland Yard, which is where Fury of Dracula kind of comes from anyway.
It's kind of funny. A lot of people forget Scotland Yard exists, I think.
Yeah, that's a shame. It's a great
It's a good game. It is. It's, you know, Letters to Whitechapel as well.
Very
similar.
Yeah. But I have to think I have to think that the what surprises me about that is Fury of Dracula and Spectre Ops, I would not foresee appealing to a family audience so much. Whereas I think this game feels very much like Harry Potter to me, with the portraits and the living portraits and all that kind of thing, or whatever all it is in Harry Potter with the ghosts and everything. And it feels like this would be very appealing to, and just from the theme alone. So,
And to that point, it was one of my things I tried when I've been playtesting, is trying to get younger people to play it. I've had people as young as 8 play the hidden role and do very well. I wouldn't say it's, you know, an innovative brand new mechanic, but the way I do combat, and as opposed to having dice and chucking dice, I have directional based combat. So the ghost player will play the direction they're fleeing in, and the hunter will play the direction they're shooting in. And if they get the two together, they'll hit the ghost. If not, the ghost has to move in the direction they played, which I thought was pretty ingenious. That's kind of tooting my own horn.
Don't sell yourself
short,
Jeff. Don't sell yourself short.
To me, it seemed unique enough that it's different. And then I get... So I use that as an example of how it stands apart, and I get to, well, it's rock, paper, scissors. I can just shuffle these cards up and play one at random. And they are right, but then you lose any sort of strategy.
And that's true. Well, sure, it's true to an extent. So the question is, are there ways that you can sort of motivate the decision that players make there, such that there's some it's not just a total guess. There's some reason why I might expect you might go that way, because you're going to try and free that one ghost there. But I might also expect you're going to go that way because it's a more direct escape route for you. I mean, hopefully there's that kind of element in this decision that you have some basis for. I think he might do this, but you know, it's all Iocane powder, right? I mean, but you want there to be something more than just, surely I can't take the glass in front of you. You want there to be a little bit of a basis to guess what the person might do.
One of my more recent changes to do that, somebody did tell me in a feedback that the trying to do the mind games of which way is he going to go was something fun, and I've been trying to find ways to play that up more. And so one of the things I've had now I've tried doing is I have the ghost player tell you the direction he's going in. And if he tells the truth, he gets a reward. So it's changed it up some. It's definitely taken me back to the balance game, which is always fun, you know, rebalancing it to do that. But
sure.
If there's other ways that you can think of or something to be able to play up the mind games portion of things, that would be... I don't know.
Well, if the ghost has, say, 3 goals that it might need to be working on, and these are available information to everyone else, but they don't know, of course, which goal the ghost is working for, that's going to inform that sort of mind game decision. Oh, I'm trying to figure out which goal he's trying to do. So if he's going to want to go left, he's working on goal A, but he's going to want to go right if he's working on goal C, and I don't know where he might go for goal B, that throws in a little bit more than just rock, paper, scissors. It's a little bit less arbitrary.
Well, and the other thing that's beneficial about that is it prevents the other players from goaltending. The thing about Scotland Yard that works so well is, you know, it's just I'm trying to run out the clock, you know, so it's not like you can just stand somewhere and wait for me to come to you. But in a if we're in a mansion, you know, and I'm trying to free portrait ghosts, it's just a matter of I'm going to stand here and you're going to come here eventually, probably, right? Yeah. Or by me standing here, you're not going to. But if I don't know what you're doing, what you're trying to do, to some degree, I can't just stand around and wait for you to show up or keep you from showing up here.
Yeah, and I guess I should have elaborated more in my initial opening is when he frees the paintings from him, they do have objectives. That's how he scores his points.
Okay.
So he can try to run one out of the house, and if it escapes, he gets a point. Maybe it's getting the green and the blue ghost in the same room together. Maybe it's trying to have four active ghosts on the board at the same time. So there are things that they're doing, which did add more complexity to it, which does make it a little bit, it defeats one of my goals, but at the same point, it does make it more of a game.
Have you thought about maybe adding an element of risk for the non-ghost players to, so shall we say, shuffle forth this mortal coil and switch sides?
I have not.
Well, that's very interesting because that's sort of not exactly where I was going to go, but was to say that, like, it sounds like from the conception that the hunters are basically unafraid of these ghosts.
Yeah.
And true. If you just flip that assumption and say they are petrified of the ghosts, but they have no choice but to go and try to round them up, but they have to, you know, roll sanity checks, blah, 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 whatever stupid thing. Or they're at risk of themselves being so terrified that they can drop dead and join the ghost team in the process. Wow, that's now suddenly very, very different from Scotland Yard, Fury Dracula, or any of those other kind of games.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I haven't. Initially, when I first was designing this way back when, I did kind of want to, you know, one side versus the other, but it just naturally progressed and became pretty much one side versus the hunters versus the ghost player. But maybe it's time to go back and think about doing it again.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly precedent for games where people can switch teams and stuff, and that can be fun, but it can also throw some chaos into the game, so it might not be a fit. But
may not be where you want to go.
Yeah, I'm thinking of there's an old Mickey Mouse cartoon that's like, I can't remember what it's called, Lonesome Ghosts or something, where Mickey and Donald and Goofy have a ghost busting agency, and the ghosts are bored, so they call their agency up to come and, you know, show up at the house so the ghosts can mess with them. And so there's it's a fun little cartoon, but the point being that the ghosts try to scare the hunters to, you know, to get them to leave. They're messing with their minds and all this kind of thing. And
yeah, some sort of balance where you're not just the hunters have all the power.
Yeah, the ghosts can do stuff, like they can whatever they, oh, you made this suit of armor fall down, or the axe swung down, and or they, you know, did something, they made a loud noise that was you know, increase the hunter's fear track or whatever. You know, and if they get to some point, they run out of the house in terror and have to start from outside the house and come back in. And anyway, blah, 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 whatever. But there could be some quirky stuff that could come out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So the other thing that I can think of that would be that the hunters could do other than just chasing the ghosts, the flip side of this is that the hunters could be messing with the ghosts. If they know that the ghost is trying to free portraits, portraits are not rigidly, don't have to be rigidly attached to the walls. The hunters could move them around in strategic ways to sort of bait the ghost or frustrate the ghost, because, you know, ultimately they know what the ghost's MO is, even if maybe not the goal, but they know the ghost is trying to get fellow ghosts out of these portraits. So what if we just start messing around with where the portraits are?
Right. The little shifting goal, sort of like the old Labyrinth game.
Yeah. I like that. That's an interesting take on it. Definitely, because once they're free, you they're not corporal, so you can't grab them. But once you zap them back into a portrait form, you can then grab them and move them away from what the goal is.
Yeah, so you have some delicate balancing to deal with what happens when the living team just hoards all the pictures in one corner and guards them. So you'll need to give the ghost some ability to, I don't know, phase through the floor and pop up somewhere else or something.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have incentives to where the hunters don't want to goaltend, don't want to do things that are unfun. But that's all in scoring design. That's stuff that could happen. And I assume there are rules that the ghost must apparate so many times around at certain intervals or in certain circumstances. So
actually there's hidden movement.
So how do the hunters, if they happen to be in the same room as a ghost, then?
Oh. So if the hunter at the end of the round, if a hunter's in the room with the main ghost, he has to reveal himself.
Okay.
They found him. If he passes through a room that one of them's in, they can see him.
Okay, so it's not like Scotland Yard where you have to come out of hiding every so often. Mm-hmm. And it also doesn't sound like there's a sense of the ghosts sort of messing with the hunters and causing things to happen that will mislead them or something, like a loud clanging noise in one part of the house. And, it sounds like there's not that kind of stuff.
So the main ghost I do have a deck of cards that they get three of in a game that lets them break the rules, if you will.
Okay.
In certain ways, like there's like a, a fake sighting card. So it looks like he passed through a space where somebody's at or something. Just to give some variability in the game. And anytime the ghost does free a painting, the ghost was in that room. So it does kind of give a beacon of like, oh, well, he was just here because the yellow ghost was freed. We know he passed through here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All right.
So, yeah, it sounds to me like there are two different possible directions you can go. One is to lean into the uniqueness of the setting as the game's core selling point, and specifically approach publishers that you think would be amenable to that as sort of this being a family weight game. It sort of speaks to Harry Potter and Disney's Haunted Mansion and all this kind of stuff. It's sort of a light and playful take on the ghost game genre, and it's really for family audiences. It's not really trying to do the same thing that Fury of Dracula is doing. So yes, Fury of Dracula is a great game. Totally different audience. No overlap there. Mm-hmm. A publisher, there's probably a publisher out there who would find that argument persuasive. The alternative to that, I think, is to contemplate gameplay changes. And we've suggested a few, but I think that lean into some of the unique aspects of the setting specifically. And it sounds like you've captured some of that. Of course, you haven't told us everything about the game for brevity's sake. But I think finding ways to bring out some of these quirky ideas about ghosts and being a ghost hunter, and ghosts are scary and ghosts can move in unique ways and do interesting things. And the portraits are, I think there's a lot of things there that could potentially be brought out, maybe that add a lot of rules. So you have to be judicious about that, but those would be ways of distinguishing the game from other games in the hidden movement genre by specifically capturing mechanically some of the things that are unique to the setting that you're working in.
Yeah. Well, perfect. Yeah. I definitely agree with the ideas and all great things that I would love to try out and make the changes and see if it all still holds up. Maybe that's what'll set it apart.
Q, any final thoughts from you? I mean, we've seen a couple of games come out of our playtest group, Sidereal Confluence, Tiny Towns, that went on to be published and be very successful. What do you think it looks like when a game is ready to go and has something distinctive about it, or what do you see for this one that might get it there?
I think leaning into the theme, like you suggested, would be the way to go there. It's, as you pointed out, fairly simple rules. Although you could probably add a lot of complexity by just doing some of the, you know, asymmetric changes that we were suggesting. But yeah, I think the theme is going to be your way to go. And highlighting specific things that allow the ghosts and the monster hunters to do mechanics that wouldn't be able to show up in Fury of Dracula, you know. Well, of course, I guess Dracula could turn into a cloud of bats and fly off or something.
He can,
like
yeah,
that,
but, that's right. actually, he can, yes.
Yeah, but in that game, yeah. Things like that. But, what was that other game? Spec Ops or something? I mean, I'm assuming that's humans. Yeah. I'm not familiar with that game. So definitely lean into the kinds of mechanics that play off of that theme. And I think, I mean, you've already started doing that with your combat mechanic, the way that, you know, you're basically picking a square and hoping. It's a lot like, you know, blind fighting in D&D. So, you know, stay on that road, and I think that'll help. I hope, anyway. I don't know. I don't have a published game, so I may not be a person to turn to, but that's what grabs me about the description, is not so much that, oh, it's a hidden movement game, but, oh, it's neat. There's, you know, ghosts that I'm trying to save, and, you know, the ghost is sort of the good guy, you know, trying to help his buddies out. So it's cool. It's whimsical. Reminds me of Scooby-Doo and old Disney cartoons.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I love theme overall, so I 100% agree with you. I it makes me feel right in my decision. I want to lean more into the theme, so yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Hey, and that's not always an easy thing to do, right? Coming up with mechanics that fit a theme isn't always an easy job, so absolutely. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for calling. It sounds like you have a great idea on your hands. We wish you the best and hope you'll come back on the show and tell us how things are going with it. So, yeah, thank you so much.
I'd love to. Thank you for your time.
Okay. And Q, thank you for joining us. Where can people find your voiceover work on the internet, Q?
Look for me at quintonhudspeth.com/voiceover or quintonhudspeth.com/hudspethgames. And you can find a little more information on Uncivil Engineering there, though the website is really, really under construction.
Okay, and that's all the time we have for tonight, but also keep an eye out for the You Said This Would Be Fun audiobook, of which Q is the narrator, should be releasing quite soon now. Also, check out the You Said This Would Be Fun paperback or EPUB, available at Amazon at DriveThruRPG. And we want to thank you for listening. Good night.